Great shot.
Beautiful. Great shot.
All right, 12 is called for medical.
Not going to be enough, but hopefully she hits it. That would be a great exit. All right.
All right.
Ava Jones.
There you go. And this is a shoot-up match, so basically Ava Jones, after official scoring comes in, looks like she's going to advance, guaranteeing her a podium spot, and fourth will go to the Italian Medico.
So it could be upgraded to a 10. Oh, maybe a bounce
that was a
out
bounce
there.
Out. I am pretty sure I heard that. Absolutely. We could even hear it out of our headset. She might have broken a knock.
Here we go.
Arrow.
Nine.
Oh.
Our third place. And now we are going to see a match of women's bareboat titans.
That's it. A repeat. Lena versus Fawn in the finals.
To shoot a good arrow.
Eight.
Oh, she missed the 12. Okay, Lena is calling 12. I doubt she's going to go for the 12. She's just calling it. All she has to do is put a 6 or better to win this match. I would assume she's not aiming for that 12.
Yeah, I wouldn't. Yeah.
Seven.
She went for the 12. Why did she go for the 12? That's a very interesting move.
But she had a buffer.
Okay.
So unofficially, we're 104, 106.
Yep. All right.
And Lena Bjorklund.
Okay. She does it again. Congratulations, Lena.
Official. Fawn Gerard with a 104. Lena Bjorklund, 106. Fawn, for winning second place, is going to take home $1,500 from us, $1,200 from Hoyt, $200 from Yost, and your champion, Lena Bjorklund. First place, $3,000.
Do it. Oh, with authority. That was beautiful. Great first match by Demmer. Let's see if he can make a run here. He's got a big archer coming out here next. To move that right, he can move his string blur and his sight picture left and move that rear sight to the left, which would make his apex move to the right. But he's still struggling here to move that over to the right.
And that is the last end of this match.
There we go.
And it looks like John Demmer is going to continue to march up the leaderboard.
Love it.
Coming in eighth place.
Let's see a run.
Yeah.
Wow. What a great end. What a great end.
What a great end to end on.
Looks like Demmer's going to advance. Absolutely.
To shoot up against our fourth place qualifier.
Oh, man. Demmer's making a run. Great showing by Kyle. Congratulations to Kyle Coffey. 20 years old. Just awesome. Awesome showing.
And Kyle said he made it further than he thought.
Yep.
And he's happy about that. And what a great
away with this. He needs a 3 or better to put this game away. Oh, well, 2 or better. The scores just got updated. That's it.
That'll do
that
it.
That was a little fast, but that's enough to seal the deal.
And, of course, Demmer shooting a single spot, so all he had available was a 6.
That's right.
Like a 6 or more.
Good point. All right, Demmer's continuing his run. Super happy to see this. If anybody can do it, he's the guy that can do it. And Eric there, that looked very clean.
Mm-hmm.
Nice shot. A little bit of a left impact, but I think that's going to be enough to do it.
12 called.
12 called.
Yeah, Lena
smiles. It's out of reach. Let's go. This place will go wild if Simon can leave this great performance with a 12. Aiming low. It must be so odd having to aim low off the gold.
Ten.
Oh, he shoots a 10.
Nice.
That's awesome.
And a shrug of the shoulders.
That's right. 107 to 103. Eric Johnson moving on. Simon taking the stick. I don't think I saw Ray shoot.
Oh,
that is beautiful. I don't think I've seen Ray. Pressure is high.
Oh, that is what we wanted to see, Greg. Let's
12 called,
go.
Though.
12 called. He's
There's a
gotta,
chance.
He's got to go for the 12.
And this is what this tournament is all about with that 12. This could tie it.
And he gets
it! Are you kidding me?
Yes, yes, yes. This place is going wild. Standing. People are jumping around.
for making it exciting.
We're going into a shoot-off. We're going to shoot a one-arrow shoot-off. First arrow for score. If we're still tied, we'll shoot a second arrow for score. If we're still tied, we'll shoot a third arrow that will be measured for closest to the center. Closest wins.
12 plays?
12 is in play. Raymond, you had the choice last. You get to choose to shoot first or second.
I'm going to shoot first.
You're going to shoot first. You will shoot second. One arrow each, guys.
All right, here we go. Greg, unbelievable finish. Needed a 12 to keep this thing moving, and Eric just shoots a strong, confident, no hitch, no flinch arrow right into the 12. I'm nervous, man.
Score on this first arrow.
Yep, we're going by score, not closest to the middle. 30 seconds on the clock. 12 is called, just in case. I doubt he's aiming for the 12, but you never know. Maybe he wants to go out in glory.
That would be something.
Here we go. My phone is blowing up right now. People are going nuts out there. Everyone watching live. Let's see what happens here.
Nine.
That's a solid arrow. That's a solid arrow. I'm sure he wishes that it was in the 10. Let's see what Eric can do. Little inch. Oh,
Raymond takes it. Here we go.
Wow.
2024 Lancaster champion Raymond Huang shows up first time at the tournament and walks out with glory. Look at that excitement. That was a show, baby. This is Faribault.
Congratulations across the board from his competitor. Under all that enormous pressure, the last couple ends, I have never seen somebody take more deep breaths. He's a little warm right now, but for Raymond Huang, he comes down to the States and he conquers the world's best with an unbelievable qualification score, marched his way to the number one seed, and now walks away victorious as the 2024 Lancaster Archery Classic Faribault champion. And he'll enjoy this glory for many, many weeks to come.
Reggie, you realize my friends in British Columbia will never live in this town. Ever be Reggie. It's my new name.
Hey, Raymond, on seriously though, how does that feel to come out here? Your first classic, you know this atmosphere. You're the 2024 champ.
It's pretty unreal.
You're going to be right up there on that banner next year.
That's pretty cool.
Hey, thanks for coming out. We appreciate it, and congratulations. You're our Faribault champ.
Thank you.
Back to the Faribault Project. I'm here with two, I like to call them counterparts, but they're much better at this than I am, Mr. PJ Riley and Matt Zernzak from The Push. PJ Riley,
what's up?
Cam, Lancaster Archery Supply. I don't know. You're a man of many hats.
PJ Riley, I mean, he's like the guy. He's Mr. Archery.
I like what I thought I heard you say there, Frank. I thought you say a man of many hacks.
Maybe that's what I had meant.
Freudian slip.
Yeah. The three of us definitely chat quite a bit, or there's texts, or there's just random group discussions often about all kinds of things. But the one thing that is something I wanted to talk to these guys about, especially after this classic, and just kind of going back over the years, is the growth of Faribault at this tournament. And the part of that growth is one of the reasons I got involved. And credit to Matt, because Matt's actually been involved in traditional archery longer than I have been. We just paralleled in lives in different ways. PJ, let's kind of go back to the origin of the classic, where it started, and how... from your historical perspective working at Lancaster, because I don't think you were working at Lancaster when the classic actually started, right?
I was not, but I actually shot regularly in the precursor to what is now the classic.
So that was
that. What was that? What was that called?
So Rob had a tournament called the Christmas Classic. Mm. Every year it was in January. I shot, it was basically a local tournament. And that's what I shot in every year. That was when the shop was simply upstairs above Rob's machine shop. This is 90s we're talking about here.
Yep. I remember being there.
Yeah, and that's where I shot in that tournament every year.
Where do you live, PJ, in relationship to Lancaster, or at least where did you live at that time?
At that time, I would have been in Westchester, so like 45 minutes away. Now I'm like 30 minutes away.
Yeah.
So even getting deeper into the history, Rob, for a very short period, had a second shop, Lancaster Archery Supply 2, that was in a town called Thorndale, which was right near Westchester. And that's the one that that was the little shop I went to, shot leagues at and stuff. And then, of course, you'd hear about the big tournaments over at the big shop, which is not big compared to what is there today. And so that's how I met Lancaster Archery and met Rob. And, you know, it's just been there ever since.
Yeah, I know there's some videos floating around on YouTube, like maybe back to 2000, I'm going to say 2010.
About then.
I think you see the Real Wild, Jesse Broadwater. You see those guys standing in there in I think what is now the old range. I think that's where the video is. I vaguely remember either the carpeted wall or the trophy case, but you see Rob, you know, going through the motions of emceeing that situation. And was it always 11s also?
So it would have been, we would have used what's the upstairs range in the shop now and the shooting center. The shooting center actually was the very first Lancaster Archery Supply. Okay. That was before my time, before I was there. So the shooting center would have been the main hub back then.
Yeah. Now you probably have more people there for your FIDA tournaments than you had for the classic back then.
Yeah, I forget what the number was. I have two numbers in my head. I have 160 and 300 and something. I don't remember what's correct for the very first classic.
That's total archers.
Yeah, total archers. Yes, correct. But I do know what it was when we got to about 700. That's when it was like, all right, we got to do something else.
And I think I recall Lancaster Host Hotel. Sorry, Matt, go ahead.
Say again.
So it's the 20th Classic was this year, right? So that would have been 2003, 2004 timeframe was when that first one happened.
Correct. Yes.
Yeah. I remember going to, it might be 14, 15, someone there. I remember going to the Lancaster Host Hotel.
Correct.
That place was jam-packed.
Yep.
There was like a mezzanine that you could walk up along the side and you could see down the shooting lane. And it was just as tight can be. And it was only there for a short time.
Well, it was there for 1 year because the hotel was a disaster. And now, you know, Rob and Carol ended up having to pull out some, you know, some favors because there were people who had, I think it was no water in their rooms there, stuff like that. And so Rob and Carol had to find alternative housing for a lot of archers that year. So there were some, you know, it's Lancaster, so it's tourist area, but there are some hotels that were shut down and they agreed to take in some classic folks who were displaced by that. So it
That's wild. What a blessing Spooky Nook has been for this tournament, huh?
So now here's one of my favorite moments from that classic was we had the bright idea of having cameras downrange. So there were where you can imagine you're shooting against a solid wall and then there would be a gap between like two target bales. And we had plywood and plexiglass and a dude with a camera back there.
I bet those archers right on that edge were loving that.
So and we were like, we're all like, has anybody thought what happens if one of these gets hit by an arrow? And I can't remember if it was on purpose or by an accident that we shot into the plywood and the arrow did go in, go through. But after that, we're like, nah, let's not do that anymore.
Oh my gosh, that's wild. The the early stages of all of this. Now I'm just waiting for drones to appear at the Classic. That's got to come soon, I hope.
We were hoping to fly. Somebody wanted to fly one this year, but Spooky Nook said no. And remarkably, it's because of their nets. They were worried about their nets. But somebody asked me to fly a drone, so I had to answer that question.
Yeah,
that
we're this you year. Know we need to take care of our nets, not our liability of crashing an aircraft into somebody's nets. Head.
Yeah, right.
While they're at full draw.
Well, okay, whatever.
Yeah, that's great.
So we went from the Lancaster Host Hotel, and is that when that transition to Spooky Nook came?
No, we had one year in between. We had the Snowmageddon.
Oh, I do remember that. Yeah.
Lancaster Fieldhouse.
Yep.
And we're there.
And that was one year stint also, yes?
1 year, yep. And then we went to Spooky Nook.
Yeah. And Spooky Nook, Matt, you said it a minute ago. What a blessing it has been. I think just that facility itself is a draw for people to want to come to the tournament because there's so much going on. But Matt, PJ's talked quite a bit, and I don't want to bypass some of those years. What was the first year that you sort of found out about or like decided, hey, I gotta experience this tournament? Was that around that first year in 18 or was it prior to that?
I believe 2017 was my first year there competing. Actually, you know what? I take that back. That might be incorrect. I'm just pulling up our YouTube channel here real quick because I did a video, the Lancaster Classic. I think it was Barebow 125. So at that time, I think we only had 75 Barebow archers and we had like this grand goal to like add 50 to it. And so working with Demmer and just, we started filming this video, which was just my experience at the Classic. And I'm trying to, my YouTube studio is not working right now, but we put that video together to try to entice, you know, just show behind the curtain, like, hey, this is what happens at this amazing event. And we were all over the video. It's like Barebow 125. Like we need to get 125 people here next year. And I think that year we published it like sometime in the fall or in the winter time leading up to it. And I think that year we ended up beating that goal.
That video.
Yeah. Yeah. It was,
I don't think I have seen that video. I'm going to have to go back and watch.
It's really funny to watch. It's literally like me by myself at this Classic. I like drive over to Spooky Nook and I'm just walking around with a little AX-53, like point and shoot camera. And I'm like putting the camera in every people's face and like talking to them, making them super uncomfortable. But that was 2017, that I filmed it. So it must've been going into the 18 year was when we got like 125 or 130 Barebow archers there that year. And then that was the first year that I was in the booth was 2018 doing the commentary.
Got you. Yeah. 2018 was, I shot Olympic recurve. 2019.
Oh, really?
Yep.
Oh, cool.
2019. I lost to Joe McGlynn.
Oh, I've
talked about it on the podcast before. Made the shoot ups, shot it in the second round, first round. I don't remember. Against Joe McGlynn, who is a stellar shooter.
Yeah.
And we tied with a 117, I think, and he had one more 11 than I did, so I lost by an 11.
When did that start? Did we always have 11 tie breaks for the eliminations?
I think so.
I believe so. Then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I had asked earlier, PJ, was it always scored with 11s even back in the early days?
So in the early days, there was a different format. It was because it wasn't a 660 to start. It was you shot two different target. I don't remember if it was the five spot. There were two different rounds that you shot.
Okay.
And I don't remember what they were, but that was in the very beginning.
Yeah.
Because I think Jesse shot a perfect score, but it wasn't a 660. It was whatever we did then.
Okay. Interesting.
I just sent you guys a link to that Barebow 125 video. It was published on December 5th, 2017. So that was the 17 to 18 year. Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
It's so funny.
I'm 100% going to be, I want to go back and watch that.
It feels like forever ago. It's unbelievable.
How about it? Look, think about, well, what podcast number are you on now?
Coming up on 300 here soon.
Yeah, it's wild. Nice. So you're, that's just
insane. Yeah, our podcast would have launched the March before that. So yeah, we launched the podcast in 17.
Incredible. PJ, how many podcasts are you guys in? I haven't looked.
I have no idea.
Kind of dialed back a little bit. I think you guys have been so busy with Cam.
It's 100 and something, because I know we started numbering like with the last two, and it was 100. I don't know.
So, all right. So let's talk about that growth aspect now. So we've gotten to 2017, 18, 19, 20 was huge, actually, right before COVID. Let's talk about those years, like in all of that growth. I think PJ at the time, I think you were kind of handling the production and some of the booth work at that point in time. And then Matt, we were trying to figure out when Matt came into the mix.
I know we went to myself and the video guy then, Silas Cruz, went to ETAR, met Matt there. Of course, he's articulate and, you know, he can explain all this stuff pertaining to traditional archery. He's good at that. And it had to be, Matt, just thinking about how this had to work, it had to be that we saw you there and we're like, hey, you know about this stuff. You want to sit in the booth? Because I think if I'm, this is really fragmented memory, but I think they wanted me. It would have been Chuck Cooley, Teresa Johnson. And I think they wanted me. And I knew, hey, man, I'm out of my element. I don't know anything about what these people do. I call barebow archery like black magic. So I probably saw Matt there and asked him, hey.
It was like completely last minute. It was like, hey, do you want to go get in the booth for the barebow stuff? They start shooting in an hour. And it was like,
that sounds right.
I got like deer in the headlights, like, okay, we'll do the best we can. And it was Teresa and I were in the booth together, and Chuck sat off to the side.
Gotcha.
And watched the show.
And then going back, and then we listened to it afterwards, and it was like, yo, home run. Who knew? And then every year, it's just been like, I just text, hey, Matt, are you up again? You want to do it?
Yeah, you've definitely gotten better at scheduling it now. there was one year in there that I didn't go to the Classic to shoot. I think it might have been like 2020. Mm-hmm. And you texted me like on Friday. It was like, hey, you in for tomorrow night's barebow? And I'm like, I looked at Nicole, my wife, and I'm like, you up for a one night drive out to Lancaster real quick? So we drove out like midday on Saturday and did the booth. And then
I remember I just assumed that you were going to be there, and then when you weren't, I was like, oh crap, maybe I should have.
Yeah, there was something with my job. I couldn't get there on Thursday and Friday to actually post a qualification score. I'm like, all right, I'll sit this one out. And as soon as you sent the text, I'm like, all right, that's reason enough to drive out there. It's not too awful far. It's like 3.5 hours away.
I think that was also the year that you might have come out and set up like was that the year you set up like a table?
I think
and you just recorded.
That was the year before.
Was it the year before? Mm-hmm. I remember that there was just like random people sitting down, and you recorded like this lengthy, like two or three or four different times with all as many people as you could get.
Yeah,
and you know, you hear the background noise and stuff. Yeah. And we're like, it was still fun while
yeah, the table I used to set up would just have like stickers and shirts and stuff. I never sold anything there, but it was just like a landing spot to actually get people to come in and into the booth and do podcasts. But I stopped doing it because it actually turned into an inventory job for me, because everybody and their brother would dump their stuff behind the table and was like, hey, you're going to be here for a while. Can you watch it? And like, there'd be 15 guys barebows like laying on the floor behind me. Yeah, that's great.
That is funny, but it's still, you know, trials and tribulations of trying to cover events. And and this is probably touching on the other podcast we were gonna try to record, when you have a media presence of some kind, I hate the word content creators, but when you have a media presence of some kind in regards to covering and promoting and stuff, it can be a bit of a overwhelming job, especially if you're trying to shoot or just in general enjoy it for what it is. And you know, but you miss out. Like you miss out.
Yeah. I mean, in some respects you kind of gain more than the average spectator, because I'm when I'm there and I'm witnessing it and I'm talking to people or filming things, I'm looking at it from like, you need to make good content angle. Mm-hmm. And you're kind of like in it more than just a spectator. Like you're watching the elimination matches. If you don't have any content creation motivations behind it, you're just taking in the show and it's really enjoyable. But at the end of it, like this year, we decided not to do the podcast like we typically do, Frank, like where we just like play by play, do color commentary for the bare bow eliminations for the top 64. And I got to the end of it and I was like, wow, that was a really good show. That was really neat this year, not like quote unquote covering it or creating content, but there was something missing for me. Like it was like,
I can agree.
Kind of ended and I looked around like, whoa, what happened? That just was like a complete blur because I wasn't like very intentionally absorbing what I was watching, you know, and trying to like come at it from a content angle. So
I got a little taste of that because I just uploaded an episode. I did a live feed of the last end of 32 and 16. So I just caught the last end, but it still isn't the same because like we were there with no camera, headphones, mics, and binoculars. And we were just like up and down the line the whole time. And you do like, you're like, you feel like in some ways in that moment, you feel like you're like right at the bail with them experiencing the emotions.
Yeah, you're reporting it, right?
Yeah. It's just from a different angle. I mean, but I think it's cool. And I think the important part, and Matt, we probably have to next year, we're going to like, we had this conversation, we're doing it. The important part of getting that coverage for the overall good of the sport is that people are going to be like, well, I want to see the classic. I want to go to the classic. I want to feel like what it's like. Like, oh, well, the Push did this podcast of like all the head to heads and everything that's going on. And so people get a piece of that, you know, and I love the live feeds, PJ, that you guys do, but it is a little bit impersonal. It's not.
We have to be everywhere.
You have to be everywhere. So
we're showcasing
it's
everything.
A little hard. Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's.
Yeah, I agree.
A
I agree,
and B Frank. Ranges are full. And especially eliminations, because there's stuff, you know, we try to get to whatever the big story is. Well, that could be in any division.
Sure.
That could be in youth female open. Yeah. You know, we ended with that girl shot a 655, 17 years old.
Yeah.
You never know where it's going to be versus if you're focused like you guys do on barebow, you know, that's cool. And you got everybody's right there in the same area, same section of the range.
Something I try to convey to people that are like on the fence, whether or not they're going to come and show up. It's like you enjoy like the big net, right, that you cast out there is the barebow finals that's on YouTube. I mean, we have so many people. I'm sure we'll dig into the numbers and like the response that's gotten. But for every incredible moment that happens on the barebow finals that gets publicized to everybody, there's 10 of them that happen like that in the eliminations. Cause you have 32 matches going on at once. And then like, obviously it whittles down and whatnot. And it's just, I try to get people there as much as possible because that the eliminations is just so much fun to stand there. And then you know, it's the building up. It's like this, it's weird. It's building up to the finals later that night.
Yeah.
I always try to get people to show up. And it was really cool. We saw like a huge contingent of local traditional bow hunters that are content creators or guys that we see at ETAR every year. This year was their first year coming, and they didn't come and shoot, but they came there to watch the eliminations and stay for the finals, like Kurt Cabrera and Schleem and all those guys, which was so cool to see. Like it's starting to pull in these diehard traditional bow hunters.
There was a contingent there from Guyana this year. Guy saw me going up and down the line. He stopped me. Hey, I just want to tell you, you know, we came from Guyana this year. They were all barebow shooters.
No way.
Well, the barebow contingency across the pond and in all directions is actually pretty vast. Like the in my group specifically, like what's the country? Philippines. The Philippines National Barebow Championship was like 500 plus archers.
Huh?
Really?
Insane numbers.
Wow.
Like cause a couple of those guys have taken like my online seminar, and one of them took one of my coaching certifications that I do for S3DA online. And, you know, we chit chat about certain things, and I'm like, hey, you know, the one girl posted like a 650 something, I think, outdoor target score. And were or 647. I don't remember what it was, somewhere in that ballpark, you know. And then I was talking to one of them, and I'm like, hey, how many shooters do you have at your national tournament? He said, it's insane. We're all over. And I maybe in some ways, an inability to get all of the equipment might play a role into that. Like, hey, if I can just get a riser and some limbs, I'll figure out a string, throw on a rest, and then we're good. You know, we'll call it, you know how bareboat archers, we'll make a weight and we'll make it work, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
But now here we are, you know, you got somebody from Guyana coming, and now we're pulling more than just Sweden and Denmark. You know what I mean?
Australia, and Italy, of course. And, yeah, and, all over the place.
Yeah, so like that's starting to, I'm curious where, if you compare all of the classes, which class is pulling more archers from other countries right now?
Yeah, the most countries, yeah.
I bet you bareboat's close. I know men's open has got to be.
We had 28 countries represented this year.
That's awesome.
In totality.
Right. Yeah, all divisions.
That's great.
That is amazing.
This was our first year we saw some Koreans come over. The Korean women, though, you know, Duna Lim, who won women's Olympic recurve. Mm-hmm. We hadn't seen them, so they sent some archers over, which was cool.
It's about time, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Hey, you know, they're the best. We want them.
I can't believe it didn't happen earlier.
She wants to shoot against them.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, that is great. So, all right. Well, let's kind of continue down the path. We get into.
Well, before you go on in the future, you know, one of the bases that you have to cover here is Rob Coughlin. Hmm. That this whole thing, the reason Barebow has this stage is Rob Coughlin. He just loves Barebow.
Absolutely.
Does it. He shoots it. That's what he shot forever. And so, you know, in a lot of tournament formats, you know, nothing against them, they don't necessarily put Barebow on the stage. Mm-mm. But for him, I can promise you, a goal was, we will have Barebow on a center stage just because he loves it so much. So, you know,
understandably so. And that moment, and we'll kind of dive into the actual moment, but that moment with Eric, or not Eric, with Raymond.
Ray.
Right, yeah. After he won, Rob was the first person there to congratulate. I happened to be standing there, and I snapped a photo with Rob and Ray because I was kind of walking over. And to that general direction after Ray was celebrating with his coach in the box there. But Rob started making his way over and we made eye contact. I said, Rob, I said, this was your vision. And he looked at me, exactly. Goes, Frank, this is exactly what I've wanted to see forever.
Forever.
You know? And we've had amazing finals. I'm not to take away from anything in the past.
No.
But like the suspense of that moment. And I know there was a lot of, you know, people were amped up over compound guys smashing 12s back and forth there for a second. Too. You know, it's exciting stuff too.
It's all good.
It's all good. It's all good for Archie.
Brady Ellison, what did he end on? Was it like six or seven 11s in a row?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah, that was incredible. Yeah. That's another huge benefit of like coming to the Classic is like that's one of my highlights is being able to show up on Sunday. I don't go home Sunday. I come over and I watch Brady shoot every single year, and then I watch the compound open.
Yeah,
And it's a great show. If you're a fan of archery, it's different, right? But it's fun. It's so great.
I still think, though, the environment is just a little bit different with the Barebow Finals.
It is, no doubt. So my favorite thing with that is that was all organic.
Yeah.
I remember it distinctly building that, you know, we would have the first when we were at the Lancaster Field House that, you know, the crowd was, you know, it was about the same for all of them. Probably the biggest crowd was for the compound open. And then the next year when we went to the Spooky Nook, I think it was the second year that Rich Barker beat Demmer in the finals. It was like, this is different.
Yeah, you know,
different. It was louder. There were more people there. And just like, it just kept going and going. And then each year it just got louder and crazier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just
well, I think also your production value, including the lighting, the cameras, the whole process had started to change at that moment.
Oh, like, yeah. When you go back to like 2017 and watch the videos on YouTube, it's like all the house lighting is still on. Yep. It's very different vibe compared to like now.
It was on B range. We were at the very end of B range.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Versus in Olympic Hall, the separate area. But, you know, like Rob said, he went to Nîmes 1 year and saw how their finals area was. And I remember him coming back and being like, that's what I want. Mm. I want that look.
I'm glad you brought Rob up, PJ, because like, no matter how proud I am of the push, and Frank, you probably can relate to this with the Barebow project, and we're helping people and making content as approachable and knocking down as many barriers to entry into the Barebow world as possible. The growth that Barebow as a sport has had, the nexus was Rob Coffle's vision.
Like, absolutely, 100%.
Period. You know, we are here with the amount of attendance and like his investment in this class has just made it easier for us to have these brands that talk about this subject because he's casting the big net for us. You know, it's been awesome.
Well, and we're seeing that grow.
Don't we have the biggest payout for a Barebow?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
By far.
For sure.
$8,000.
Yeah. By far. And while we're on that topic, look at the growth then of manufacturers and small business starting to dive into that side.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, and in some ways, Matt, you and I fall in that category in a very microscopic way. But like when you have, and I have to give a shout out to Hoyt and Doug Denton because they're like, hey, you know what? We're going to throw contingency and we're going to give you a bonus if you use our stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then people won that bonus this year. Like the potential payout was incredible.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's all because
of Rob Coffle.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Because like the manufacturers getting on board to actually start investing R&D funds into satisfying Barebow is purely because of the amount of YouTube hits that the finals get and the vibe that's in that room. I mean, Doug Denton's there some years. He's seeing it firsthand, like, whoa. And I think people that walk into that final stage or watch the videos online, if you're a manufacturer, you're going, there's something here. Like there's, we can scale, we can actually grow and diversify into this other sport and try to make money a different way. And that right there is huge. Whether you're a supporter of Hoyt or not, them coming onto the Barebow side has been huge. Absolutely.
Huge. Well, and even I spent a lot of time with Steve Anderson, this classic, and we were filming some stuff for Hoyt and doing this and doing that. And even Steve said, he goes, this is incredible. Like I don't think Steve ever really had a chance. He's just like a fringe observer of Barebow because of his role in Hoyt. And, you know, he's always been in a center hub of compound, everything compound. And then he's over at the Barebow. We call it the Barebow range, the one with the grass, PJ. Like that's where all the bear, that's where it happens, people. Like there's the finals are exciting, but the shenanigans that might be going on over there is the place to be.
It was more fitting when we had the turf there just because you belong in the grass.
You like the grass. That's right. There's something about it.
You're not wrong.
Yeah, that's,
it's
that's
definitely
a good point,
turned
Frank.
Into like our little hub. Like we end up, that's the range we go to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, but Steve came over and he's like looking around, you know, and people are walking up and we're chatting and I think that's where they had the meet the pros thing or whatever that was called, you know, and Steve's like, how come you guys aren't over there. I was like, Steve, I was like, we're here all the time. I said, we talk to everybody. We don't have to have a moment. This is the entire weekend long, the people involved in that side of things. And he was like,
that's where the work gets done. Honestly, like I come away from the Lancaster weekend with like my entire next year of development as an archer already lined up because of the practice range. Like when I'm not shooting, I just can't wait to like get off the line and hustle back to the practice range to see like who's there, who can I like film them them shooting or talk to them, and you know, try to get some knowledge from them. But yeah, the practice range is like some of the funnest times at the Classic.
It definitely is. There's no question.
One of the things that I think is cool is now with our Easton Youth Tournament, you know, it was like 700 kids this year, is to see that how many are now shooting Baerbo, mm-hmm. who where you didn't see that 10 years ago, you weren't seeing kids shooting Baerbo in competition. Slinging arrows in the backyard, absolutely. But to come out and compete, now we're seeing it. And I always say, hey, no one has more fun than you guys out there. And no one does.
I mean, most of those kids competing in the Easton tournament already shot their qualification because they're competing in the regular Baerbo competition as well.
Absolutely.
Well, I mean, we're not just kids that are from the United States. We're pulling high end shooters from other countries now that are kids. And I don't care what you say, Leo and Ollie are still just kids. Well, I guess Leo's adult now,
but he's been shooting Baerbo like at a very high level competitively, like when he was still a teenager. But if you look at the eliminations, that was one of the biggest eye opening things for me is standing there in the eliminations, you have 32 matches going on. And on one end you have like, as it started getting whittled down, you have like Alex Melnick versus Eric Johnson, and you have Joel Turner versus Raymond. And in the middle you have Paul Helms versus Demmer, but then every other match has a 20-year-old in it. I mean,
Ava Jones.
Yeah, so many young. Yeah,
a couple Jones, years ago, exactly. Aaron Hayab.
Aaron Hayab, exactly. Like these kids are just—it's crazy. They're stepping up the game big time.
I mean, and I think those equate to some of our favorite things about the growth of the Baerbo and the Classic for sure. Is that volume of people. Speaking of volume, I didn't look, I'm not going to lie. What was the final number this year for the Classic registered Baerbo shooters?
Let's look that up and get it right.
Those statistics somewhere. I bet.
Yeah. Registered was like 287 before the tournament. I think like 260 ended up shooting something in that number
in Baerbo, and then plus the women.
That was men's side. And then women were right at the like 89 mark, I think.
Yeah. Did you guys ever look at this the total statistics of all classes and see where everything falls into place, PJ? Just out of curiosity.
No, that would be, you know, no. Compound, the open compound, not the pro division. That's our biggest class. I know that. Bow hunter's pretty big. Mm-hmm. And this being an Olympic year, usually Olympic recurve is pretty big, but I didn't look at those numbers to see what's what.
Yeah.
But it's bigger than, I'm pretty sure it's bigger than the pro, you know, open pro.
Yeah, I believe so too.
I think we're in the 100s mm-hmm. for that.
Yeah.
So I guess prior to this year, for both of you, I have a question. What was some of I want to say your favorite moment, but like your pedestal worthy, most memorable moments that you've been a part of with the Baerbo side of things? We can talk shoot up. We can talk qualifications. Doesn't matter. Who wants to go first?
So, I mean, I think, just one that lives in my brain is Demmer versus Rich Barker. And I don't know if it's just because Rich is a local guy or, I mean, to me that at that time was David versus Goliath and just people gravitated. Cause I believe Rich came in fourth or third. He had to mm-hmm. win a couple matches to get to Demmer.
I think he came in like that first match though.
That was when we only took four mm-hmm. for Baerbo.
Yep.
He just shot his way through the pack to get to the top there. And if you know Rich, he's super quiet. You almost never hear him talk. And just for him to be up there just throwing bullets down there, just insane. Yeah.
I thought that was a great moment because I think that was powerful to the non-initiated, the people that hadn't come yet, because mm-hmm. it showed like, hey, you don't have to be John Demmer to win this thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, and nobody knew Rich very well, you know, if you weren't in the Baerbo community up until that point. And so it was like a big eye opening, like, oh, this is the Baerbo bench is pretty deep. Like, this is really good. It's possible. And I think year over year, I think one of the biggest, interesting parts is like if you look at Olympic recurve or open pro, there's like the same handful, like 15 people that are always going to be on that stage. But what we've demonstrated year over year, it's a, like, there's only a few constants, and it's usually Demmer and Eric Johnson, maybe. And that's about it. Everything else is just completely new faces. And now that we have eight shooters making the final, we get to see that even more. And every year it's just a revolving door of like different people showing how deep this barebow bench is. And it's pretty amazing. So I agree with you. That was going to be one of my top ones as well, is the Barker win for sure.
And well, one of, go ahead, Frank.
Well, I was going to let Matt kind of elaborate on his, because since we already talked about the Barker moment, we only have to get permission from Lancaster and pull a snippet of that and put it
for
in
sure.
And
you have it, do it.
you heard it here first, everybody. Matt, what about you? What's another moment that stands out for you?
I think I have a couple, but I think my top favorite one is probably Lena's performance last year. Lena stepping up and quite literally shooting almost perfect out there. That right there, I think, was the pinnacle of performance, showing what barebow can do. I mean, she went 31, 30, 29, 31, I think, is what she did in those four ends. And just her dominance in the women's division over the last 4 years is just something that I love her character. I think she comes up there and as she's talking, you kind of get this, you know, with the language barrier there, you kind of get this, like, she's a machine type of, like, she's just a shooter. But then the more the microphone is pushed in her face, like, you start seeing how funny she is. Like, she's actually a really funny person. She makes me laugh so much when we're sitting off to the side. Yeah. She's super sarcastic, and like, her comedy is really, really funny. So
she's such a fierce competitor that she gets like a scowl, but it's not like, it's just like the level of seriousness, almost like she's
business.
Rigid.
She's there for business.
Yeah. But the one thing that we've seen in her, in my opinion, is her growth as a personality within the sport has changed from their first time coming.
Yep. Yeah. I agree.
She's really turned into, I think you coined the phrase, a character of sorts. Like, she's, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean, like, she has embodied a way to reach people. There's humor there, dry and hilarious humor. I remember, I think it was last year, like, after she won, somebody said something, it might have been you, PJ, she was like, I'll let you know when I get the check. Like, she it's so funny to see, like, and Demmer's a character. I mean, but his personality draws people as well. Like, it's that that friendliness yet comedic value of, like, and you kind of have to have that approach to shoot this sport in some ways.
But there's a professionalism it's all rooted in a professional. That's what I love about those two as being kind of like the figureheads of the women and men's barebow division. It's like, yes, we're here to have fun. We are different, clearly. Like, you can see it in how we behave, and like how Demmer was going back and forth with you, PJ, like making fun of you. Like, that's just showing that comfortableness up on the stage is really important, I think. But also, like, when it comes to being professional, like, they're wearing jerseys. They're carrying themselves in a way that, like, little kids watching and being motivated to come into the sport. Oh, yeah. It's like, I want to be this person, and they're just a really good role model for the sport. I think we need more of that in the barebow community. I know this is a completely different podcast whatsoever, but
it's all good, man.
I think this moment for the barebow community, as we have this momentum coming out of this finals, and as we're preparing for next year's big show, is we as the barebow community really need to look inward and take this opportunity to show the professional archers in the industry, show the manufacturers in the industry, you can invest in us, and we're going to give you back a great show. We're going to give you back a great product to be able to, in a platform to sell your products.
Yeah.
And I think that's important. I think we need to maybe start shying away from being too extreme. Too extreme. I think we still need to carry us, like, we're here to do a job. This is a professional sport. We are professional archers and athletes. Mm-hmm. Let's start behaving like it.
Well, I think that's, for me, as being an outsider, not in the barebow community, is what I appreciated, that, you guys have fun, But when it comes time to throw down, it's serious. Yeah. I mean, you guys both know Demmer. Hey, he's a fun guy, likes to have fun. But when he's up there, he wants to kill you.
Yeah, when that buzzer beeps.
It's Fawn Gerard. I mean, Fawn's famous for almost, when it was a mixed class, for almost making it to Final Four when it was men's and women's together. She wants to win. Mm-hmm. And so it's you guys have fun, but it's serious competition too. And then Eric, you know, his shot is...
Just the comment, though, on the fun part, like, I think that that's one of the, I don't think, I know that is one of the major draws. Then there's communities out there that look at us like they think we're clowns because we're laughing and having a good time. But we also, like, we can be polished when we need to be.
Yeah.
But you have to have, I've said this a million times, you have to have a level of comedic value to shoot and enjoy Barebow because it's hard. And you can't be too serious because you are going to...
You're going to throw it in the blue, I promise.
Yeah, you are going to come across the moment where things are going to go... And you have to be like, yep, that just happened. Or, you know, I just shot a Demmer, as we all have coined the phrase.
Demmer in that world finals, what was it, in Czechoslovakia or whatever, and he's in the gold medal match and he shoots a one. And we're just like, where the heck did that come from? You know, just, it happens.
Yeah, but he embodies the way to handle that. He literally just brushes it off. Gets
and usually comes back and drains an 11.
Exactly.
Right, or something like that.
You know, I'm guessing we're building up to it, but Raymond Huang goes out there and, you know, we're talking about the Eric shot. Raymond shot an 11 on his third arrow.
Yep.
Unbelievable, which left Eric, he had no choice.
No choice.
It was a 12 or he was done.
Yeah.
And then he hits it.
Just... Well, that's a great segue. So let's just talk about that, what that moment was like for experience it, because you both experienced it from two very specific vantage points. Matt being in the booth with Greg White, PJ, you were right there your first time emceeing the Barebow finals. And I mean, listen, I'm partial to John Wirt, but you did a hell of a job, man.
You did really good. PJ,
I'm
you did
partial
really
to
job.
John Wirt too.
I know. I miss John. I do miss having John Wirt in the mix on that situation, but you did a hell of a job. And what was it like? Like, where I have, this is what I, you know, the, it's not a Vine, but like the reel of, Joe Rogan in the one fight where he like goes nuts.
Yes,
PJ.
Yes.
Like that's what I pictured you two as. Yeah. Like that was, you were the my verse. You were my Joe Rogans in that moment.
Well,
like what was it like for you, PJ, just being like right there and handling
so
it?
The icebreaker was even before that when I called out Raymond Huang, because the lady who put all the information, it said Reginald Huang. So I, here he comes from British Columbia, Reginald Huang. So then I'm thinking, as I go up to him the first time, I'm like, well, do I call him Reginald or do I call him Reggie? So I put the microphone in his face. I say, Reginald, do I call you Reginald or do I call you Reggie? And he says, well, my name's Raymond. And so, you know, this is live TV and I'm processing in my brain.
You're like, wait a minute. What? Like, what? I know I read that right.
I was like, And so I said something else about Reggie and he's like, no, it's Raymond. Then I turn around
because
and look at the TV.
They have the, go ahead. I'm sorry.
We have the TV that with the information of the archers. Like, and I look, I was like, there it is. Look, it says Reginald Huang. And he's like, yeah, it's Raymond.
Yeah. He was pretty calm, like cool about that too.
Yeah. That was nice. He handled that well. Cause I talked to him before the finals. So I knew his name was Raymond. And when you called him Reginald, I'm like, that's interesting. And he comes out, but then after that, they put the avatar with like a couple quips, you know, that was a really nice addition you guys did this year. Yeah, like just adding that image, and it said Raymond and like I'm like, okay, that must have been a mistake.
But then now he's Reggie.
He's Reggie, right.
When he wins, they're chanting Reggie. So to me, that's epitome of Barebow. Here's this guy shot incredible, and yet now he's got this nickname, and you know, just the way it all happened, I thought was cool. But then when he shot the 11, I was like, oh, okay, cool. Yeah, this is over. Yeah. And then I hear Eric calls the 12, and Connor Caulfield, I know people were saying that I called it, but Connor Caulfield was the spotter. So he was the one calling the arrows. And so when Eric shoots, you hear somebody yell, and he got it. Well, that's Connor.
It sounds like you. It does sound like you.
It sound like, I agree. It did sound like you a little bit.
The place just went nuts, and it was so loud. And I was saying things in the microphone. I couldn't hear it. It was so loud in there. Just so loud. Like, are you kidding me that nuts. He hit that 12?
Connor, yeah. And shout out to Connor. Connor's, you know, a mainstay within Lancaster Archery Supply for obvious reasons. But Connor, you could hear the excitement in his voice.
Heck
with
yeah.
Every arrow, every call. Like he did such a good job.
He knows a big arrow when he
emphasizing it when it needed. It was the chemistry of that situation could not have been better.
It was cool.
Without a doubt. Matt, what was it like for you in the booth? Like, did you want to jump out of your chair or what?
I did. I absolutely was out of my chair. I wish there was, just to reference the reference you made, Frank, like the Joe Rogan like meme there, where they're like all leaning on top of each other. Like literally that's what it was. And PJ, it must have been a few days after the show, he messaged me. It must have been the first time he actually had a chance to sit down and review that moment.
Yeah.
And he messaged me. He's like, dude, like you guys were losing your mind in the booth when he hit that. And I sent him that image of the Joe Rogan.
Tie it.
And he gets
Yes, yes, yes. This place is going wild. Standing. People are jumping around.
And UFC, I said, this is what
hold
we
on, hold on, hold on. Is there footage of that, PJ?
No, I don't think so.
I have the text, I'm sure.
No, but I think what Frank's asking is, it was there
the actual
any, was there any camera moment. Pointed back
oh,
to the booth?
On you guys? No,
I don't think so.
No, the camera was, that's a handheld, so they would have been out on the floor.
Yeah, because they come up to the booth right before the show starts, like for a new class, and they set a camera on an empty tripod that's right in front of the booth. And as soon as we're done with our moment, and they cut back to, you know, whatever screen they're cutting to, that camera gets pulled away.
No, let's go back. Let's fix that. That's gotta get changed. Rob, put that in your notes.
Obviously, if we knew changed. That was gonna happen.
Yeah, right. We just need a little GoPro on the table or something that's running.
Matt, you're in charge of it. We'll just put it on the push.
But you know that
that would have been great.
Like that moment is, you know, being in the booth, you're tasked with a job to like keep the listener and viewer kind of engaged and start building up the story that you hope is about to be written, but you have no control on whether or not it's going to be written.
Yeah.
And when Raymond hit that 11, it was like, this is building up. Like, could it happen? And it's in the back of your head. It's like, it's a 12. He's got to go for a 12. He called a 12. And it's like, it's building up to that moment. You're like, and you were just hoping, right? Because you in there, you're like, you don't have any favorites. You can't play favorites. So it's just, you want the show to be as best it can be for Bearbo to grow. And dude, when he hit that 12, it was insane. I was out of my chair screaming. Like you can hear it on the commentary. Like I'm just like losing my mind. And eventually Greg White had to like, he put his hand across like, shut up. we have a button in the booth where you can push it and kill our mics. And he's like, I like to let this moment play out. And like, you can hear me like pretty abruptly shut up. It's because Greg White made me shut up. He's like, let this fucking play out.
Dude, we should have had Greg on here too. That would have been funnier to hear,
so,
to hear him, his
it's
version
a shame
of it.
Because I've watched it play back. And because, you know, they have to, the mics are different. The way they're set up, they're different.
Right.
What you hear on the stream
on the stream, yeah,
is not what it was in the building. The building, it was absolutely deafening.
It was deafening. Yeah.
I'm yelling into the microphone, which is the loudest thing in there, and you can't hear me at all. That's how loud it was.
Yeah. It's almost because I think the mics that the producers had active were our mics in the booth still.
Right.
because I could hear, like, when I eventually, like, the crowd was going nuts for minutes, and eventually I stood up and I just gave a silent clap to Eric for hitting that before they started setting up for the one arrow shoot down. And you can hear my clapping coming through that mic on the live stream. So that they like that environment noise was coming all the way from the crowd all the way across our mics being picked up. It was wild in there, man. Insane. That was awesome.
It's so cool. I'm so glad that we got this conversation. Couldn't have gone any better. I feel like there's a perspective that even though they hear it on the live stream and they get to see you up there, but hearing your first person view and you like the emotional value that goes, because you guys have to stay calm. Like you have, like you, like Matt, you're
We're
talking
supposed
about, like,
to fail.
If it wasn't for Ben White, you know, but like you have to try to like keep your wits about you. It's just like having a monster stand in front of you, and it's like you have to keep your wits about you and do the thing right from a commentary standpoint.
Yeah.
You know, plus you're on a live feed. Like I'm not that guy. Like I am, but I'm not. Like I have way too many four letter words and unpredictable comments. So I'm not that guy. But I have so much. Just because of my environment, I have so much appreciation. Like you guys have added a level of an entertainment to it. And I don't know if you guys have ever, anybody's ever told you that, but you have.
Thank you.
And having that, just that base knowledge and knowing you personally, I think it's awesome.
Well, most of that goes to, and you know, we're all patting everybody on the back here, but that's what we recognize with Matt from the early stages, me especially. After the first one that he did, when I'm listening to him, I'm like, this dude has the technical knowledge down and explains it perfectly. Mm-hmm. The crawls, you know, what they're doing with their points, you know, how they're aiming, all that stuff.
You sound like a professional right now, PJ.
That's listening to Matt. And so it became clear. It was like, this dude is perfect for that. We need him every year because, you know, and Greg White, he'll talk to that as well. You know, it's his job to steer the ship. It's Matt's job to explain actually what's happening in terms of what the archers are doing. Yeah. Greg can talk about the match scoring and that stuff, but for the technical information, Matt just has it. He can talk about everything they're doing.
Oh yeah.
And he's just good at it.
Yeah, no question. No question. Have you ever, just sidebar, quick diversion conversation. Have you ever actually shot barebow, PJ?
I have. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I mean, just, you know, just messing around in the rain. Yeah, there's recurves down at the academy.
I don't know, Matt. That could be the makings of an absolutely comedic value push short vlog.
There you go.
Trip to Lancaster to go shoot 3D with PJ Riley and Airbow.
So, you know, we used
or Trad, just Trad in general.
When we started doing bow videos, our bow review videos every year, I would shoot those. I'd shoot the compound at 20 yards with no sight on it. And our video guy would be like, hey, you're kind of getting close to that yellow. How are you hitting that? And of course I'm using a release and all that. I'm like, you just figure out where to aim.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah. Or shooting a compound system, right? Barebow.
That's great.
Too funny. Well, guys, I mean, I think we hit the nail on the head. Without a doubt, you guys hit the mark with the conversation and the moments. Eric's 12. Reggie, we're your number one fan, Reggie. I hope you watch this. The whole situation.
You got to credit Reggie for that because his 11, which is an unreal shot,
that's it,
set the stage for that.
For the 12.
Yeah, yeah, because you're exactly right. Because if he would have shot a 10 or a 9 there, it doesn't play out that way. Eric's aiming in the middle. He's, you know, you just, we're not sitting here, you know, musing over that moment like we are now.
No, and think about too then the follow up to that one arrow shoot off.
Yeah.
Like imagine if they both had hit like 11s or something. Right. You know what I mean? Like that's the next
thing. I mean, you can hear it in our voice a little bit because we're up here, right? Yeah. It's just like we're screaming. Yeah. And then the one arrow shoot off is like, oh my gosh, that's how can this story like be even better? And yeah. Raymond shoots a nine. And then it's like, oh, but he wishes it was a 10. And then Eric shoots an 8. And it's like,
Yeah, like that's it. Like, holy crap, it's over. They told
yeah,
me.
It's yeah,
like,
it's over. Like
a,
yeah.
Not that it was a bad ending, but it's for like sure. a bad ending to a good movie. You're like,
that's right. Yeah.
Is that really how this is going to end?
And I felt bad for.
They just shot 11 and a 12. You know?
I feel bad for Eric because he's like, nobody's going to forget that eight. And he's like, oh, that eight. And it's like, dude, no. you are infamous now. No one even remembers the eight.
Nope.
Like you,
no, no, not
one
at
even,
all.
No one even knows that you didn't win the competition.
Right? World archery, Chris Wells being the shrewd guy he is, before we could even cut up our own video, made a short of that moment and put it on World Archery's yeah. YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Because he knows that yep. that went nuts.
Yep.
And then, was, you know, we nuts. Followed with our own. But yeah, that was the moment.
That was the moment. That was the moment that we wanted to get to for sure. Guys, I look forward to, you know, having these conversations after next year, maybe even, and maybe even some of the other podcasts that we've talked about. But unless there's any other moments that you wanna hash out, I'm pretty good with. We're actually into this pretty long, so I'm good with it. We got what we had to.
I should mention. Raymond messaged me like 3 days after the tournament, and all his message said was, "The monster you've created."
He said
he got friend requests and messages from all over the world, and everybody was calling him Reggie.
Oh, I love it. That's so great.
This is what I want. You guys need to make like a Reggie number one bear bow or whatever Lancaster shirt, and take care of the guy. But make a target with a 12 barebow shirt with an arrow right where Eric hit it. And just, you know, like there's just so many things to go along with it. Cause people will be like, they're moments that are going to go down in barebow infamy.
Oh, that shot will forever live on your guys's like B-roll reels.
Forever.
Leading up to like the little cut ups for the exchange between classes on the live stream.
Absolutely.
No question. Like you said Connor, Eddie got it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So good.
Yeah. Like that's whole, easy fodder for the video producers.
Yeah. Right. Exactly.
Oh, man. Guys, thanks so much for taking the time out of your busy days. Always and fun. And
did you report. See the air quotes he put up there, PJ?
I did see that.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. No, seriously. And just chatting Barebo, it's definitely been, it's been fun, and I appreciate it.
I have one quick question. I didn't mean to. I mean, you were wrapping.
No, you're
up
good,
really
man.
Nicely, I'm sorry, Frank. This
yeah,
is your
it's all
show.
Good. It's all good.
But I figured I just wanted to throw one quick question out to you, PJ. PJ, when are we getting a longbow class, man?
Oh man, that's a good question because there were a bunch there this year. I saw them gathered outside next to the cam trailer. I want to say there were like maybe two dozen.
Yep. Yeah, I think there's just 27. Pretty close to it. Yep.
Somewhere about there. Yeah. Yeah. I have no idea how that works. I know it was several years of the women's before we separated women's barebow out.
Yep.
And they showed up in number for several years. And then they finally hit to where we're like, okay, this is going to be sustainable. Because obviously the fear is that you have these diehard folks and you're like, okay, let's do it. And then they show up 1 year and mm-hmm. then the next year they don't.
Sure.
And the next year. And that's kind of the fear. But yeah, that's.
I'll tell you this from, we were talking about content and just like videos and stuff and how good they do. I would predict that a longbow wood arrow finals on the final stage would pull equivalent views. than the bare bow side for sure.
Well, that would be cool.
I don't know how many of those ETAR people actually watch YouTube longbow, but you might be right. They're definitely an enthusiastic bunch, and I think that I want nothing more than to see longbow get an opportunity for sure. I do know that like you guys are pretty packed. Like,
yeah, it's tight when you look at that final schedule. I mean,
space and production time are tight, so I think that also plays is probably just from the conversations I've had. I know that that's going to play a role in like what's the availability of space and time to really start to grow this thing, and are we getting to the point where you know, and then there's sponsorships and stuff like that. I'm sure it plays a role as well, but I think it's a conversation to be had, and I hope that Longbow gets it. And I think if it, like you said, if they show up, it's going to be hard to turn them away. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's not going. They're not going away, so the discussion's not going.
Definitely
away.
Not. Yep.
That's great.
All right, gentlemen, I have to go ref a basketball game.
Oh, fun.
So it's my last one of the season before I go in for surgery on Thursday. So
good luck with that, Frank.
Yeah, thank you so much. Thank you so much. I'll see you in the tournament line here in a couple of months, I hope. So thank you, gentlemen. It was a pleasure. Man. You've done a phenomenal job. We all appreciate everything that you guys do for the Classic and beyond. All right?
Right back at you, man.
Thank you.
Peace out, fellas. Barrel Project out. See you guys.